stricter from outside. And I was astounded to hear the little fellow answer,
"No, no, I don't want an elephant inside a boa constrictor. A boa constrictor is very dangerous, and an elephant would get in the way. Where I live, everything is very small. I need a sheep. Draw me a sheep."
So then I made a drawing. He looked at it carefully and then said,
"No, this one is already quite sick. Make another."
I made another drawing. My friend gave me a kind, indulgent smile.
"You can see for yourself. That's not a sheep. It's a ram. It has horns."
So I made my third drawing, but it was rejected, like the others.
"This one's too old. I want a sheep that will live a long time."
So then, impatiently, since I was in a hurry to start work on my engine, I scribbled this drawing and added, "This is just the crate. The sheep you want is inside." But I was amazed to see my young critic's face light up.
"That's just the kind I wanted. Do you think this sheep will need a lot of grass?"
"Why?"
"Because where I live, everything is very small."
"There's sure to be enough. I've given you a very small sheep." He bent over the drawing.
"Not so small as all that. Look, he's gone to sleep."
And that's how I made the acquaintance of the little prince. Chapter 3. It took me a long time to understand where he came from. The little prince, who asked me so many questions, never seemed to hear the ones I asked him. It was things he said quite at random that, bit by bit, explained everything. For instance, when he first caught sight of my airplane — I won't draw my airplane, that would be much too complicated for me — he asked,
"What's that thing over there?"
"It's not a thing. It flies. It's an airplane. My airplane." And I was proud to tell him I could fly. Then he exclaimed,
"What? You fell out of the sky?"
"Yes," I said modestly.
"Oh, that's funny."
And the little prince broke into a lovely peal of laughter, which annoyed me a good deal. I like my misfortunes to be taken seriously. Then he added,
"So you fell out of the sky too? What planet are you from?"
That was when I had the first clue to the mystery of his presence, and I questioned him sharply. "Do you come from another planet?" But he made no answer. He shook his head a little, still staring at my airplane.
"Of course, that couldn't have brought you from very far."
And he fell into a reverie that lasted a long while. Then, taking my sheep out of his pocket, he plunged into contemplation of his treasure. You can imagine how intrigued I was by this hint about other planets. I tried to learn more. "Where do you come from, little fellow? Where is this 'where I live' of yours? Where will you be taking my sheep?" After a thoughtful silence, he answered,
"The good thing about the crate you've given me is that he can use it for a house after dark."
"Of course. And if you're good, I'll give you a rope to tie him up during the day, and a stake to tie him to." This proposition seemed to shock the little prince.
"Tie him up? What a funny idea."
"But if you don't tie him up, he'll wander off somewhere and get lost." My friend burst out laughing again.
"Where could he go?"
"Anywhere. Straight ahead." Then the little prince remarked quite seriously,
"Even if he did, everything's so small where I live."
And he added, perhaps a little sadly,
Straight ahead. You can't go very far.
Chapter 4. That was how I had learned a second very important thing, which was that the planet he came from was hardly bigger than a house. That couldn't surprise me much. I knew very well that except for the huge planets like Earth, Jupiter, Mars and Venus, which have been given names, there are hundreds of others that are sometimes so small that it's very difficult to see them through a telescope. When an astronomer discovers one of them, he gives it a number instead of a name. For instance, he would call it Asteroid 325. I have serious reasons to believe that the planet the little prince came from is Asteroid B612. This asteroid has been sighted only once by telescope, in 1909 by a Turkish astronomer, who had then made a formal demonstration of his discovery at an international astronomical congress. But no one had believed him on account of the way he was dressed. Grown-ups are like that. Fortunately for the reputation of Asteroid B612, a Turkish dictator ordered his people, on pain of death, to wear European clothes. The astronomer repeated his demonstration in 1920, wearing a very elegant suit, and this time everyone believed him. If I've told you these details about Asteroid B612, and if I've given you its number, it is on account of the grown-ups. Grown-ups like numbers. When you tell them about a new friend, they never ask questions about what really matters. They never ask, what does his voice sound like? What games does he like best? Does he collect butterflies? They ask, how old is he? How many brothers does he have? How much does he weigh? How much money does his father make? Only then do they think they know him. If you tell grown-ups, I saw a beautiful red brick house with geraniums at the window and doves on the roof, they won't be able to imagine such a house. You have to tell them, I saw a house worth 100,000 francs. Then they exclaim, what a pretty house. So if you tell them, the proof of the little prince's existence is that he was delightful, that he laughed, and that he wanted a sheep. When someone wants a sheep, that proves he exists. They shrug their shoulders and treat you like a child. But if you tell them, the planet he came from is Asteroid B612, then they'll be convinced, and they won't bother you with their questions. That's the way they are.